Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike.
And I'm Matthew. And for this segment, we are honored to be joined by Wendy Morris of Alpon. Wendy, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thanks so much. It's my pleasure.
And our topic this afternoon, as we hinted earlier in the segments, was about becoming the pathways to becoming a commercial or airline pilot. This is something that is a fascinating topic. We're looking forward to talking about this with you. We know that we need more pilots, and there are a lot of different ways to become a pilot. So let's say that we're talking about someone in their early career. They might be young, they might be new, it's early in their career. How does someone like that become a commercial or airline pilot?
Right. So there's a couple different pathways. One would be military and the other would be civilian. Either way gets you to the same place, and that's fully qualified, very competent airline pilots, right? That is the goal. And the civilian way is there's a couple different ways to do it. You can go out to the local airport and take flying lessons and go about it that way. You can go to college and either get an associate's degree or through a certified program, aviation program, or bachelor's. That will reduce your hours a little bit, but either way, you want to get to where you're a competent pilot. Through the military, you meet your obligation, go through their program and meet your obligations that are several years, and I think you got a little bit of feedback on that on Monday, and stop by the ALPA tent. We can give you more. We have some great, very competent and knowledgeable people who have gone through, airline pilots that have come from the military, so they can be very helpful. But either way, you get to the same place, and it's a pretty fun place to be.
So if you're going to be an airline pilot to get hired on an airline, you need your ATP, which is the 1,500-hour rule with a few asterisks on there if you're military or through the four-year or two-year degree. But a lot of people, they get their ratings and they have like 250 hours and a commercial certificate. What are the different ways to build the time to get from the 250 hours-ish to your 1,500?
Right. So you want to transition from paying for flying to being paid for flying. Now, you don't have to be paid a lot, but you just want to get on the backside of that, right? Mm. And the best way to do that, the quickest way to do that, is to become a flight instructor. So go get your certified flight instructor certificate, your CFI. You can get a CFII, the instrument, and a CFMEI for the multi-engine. But in any of those cases, get a flight instructor certificate and go from there. Because what that does is it takes you from not having to pay for flying, right, and getting paid for it, but it teaches you how to fly. The best way to learn something is to teach it. Yes. So it teaches you how to fly, and the transfer in life from that experience of taking something that's reasonably complicated and breaking it into little pieces and teaching the little pieces and putting it back together in a building block is very transferable to life. And I was very good at teaching things. I recently taught my grandson to swim a week ago, and I was able to break things into little pieces, get him dive down and grab the things on the bottom, and then got him to jump in, and then backed up and got him to swim to me underwater. So it's those kinds of things. I was a very good soccer coach because I broke it into little pieces, and I ran into people when their kids were in high school and said, the kids that you taught, that you coached are the ones that were really, really good soccer players. And it's because you break it into little pieces.
I'm curious, what are some of those little pieces that transfer well to a career as a pilot?
Okay, so when you say the little pieses of the flight instructing part, sure. So it's been a long time since I've flight instructed, like 40 years, a very long time. But what you're doing is you're teaching people, okay, here's where to look, right? You kind of do it with even Microsoft Flight Sim, right? Mm. If you're playing with that with somebody, you say, okay, here's what I want you to do. Put the 1,000-foot markers in this part of the windshield and keep it there, right? The lower third, right in that part of the windshield, and keep it there. So you're teaching in the flare, in the landing, look to the end of the runway, and because you can see more from the end of the runway. It's those little pieces that really matter.
Now, there are some people who don't want to flight instruct and they choose to do something else to build sometimes. What are the other options for people to build time to get to the airlines?
Yeah, so some of it would be Part 91 work, which would be corporate type work. So, you know, if you can get someone out at the airport that's either, you know, moving passengers and the right seat does not need a certified pilot, you know, the type rating doesn't require it, so you could go and, you know, sit in the right seat and learn to fly that way or get some experience. Those jobs are harder to get because there aren't as many of them. There's a lot of people that want to become pilots, so there's a lot of need for flight instructors, right? And that ebbs and flows, right? There was a time 2 years ago or 3 years ago that they didn't have enough flight instructors. Now I'm told it's more difficult to get a flight instructor job. It ebbs and flows, but patience is the key.
And what about Part 135? What are the requirements to go fly with something like that?
Yep, so same thing. You don't have the 1,500-hour rule for that, right? So you can go and get either in the left seat of one of those aircraft or right seat. It's just a matter of finding those jobs.
For some of us that might be a little less experienced with the CFR, what would a Part 135 look like? What might some of those examples be?
Okay, so that would be a charter operation, right? Okay. So you go out to the local airport and somebody has a Navajo or whatever it is that they're chartering, and some company comes or an individual comes and says, I'd like to go from point A to point B, and they need pilots to fly that.
Hmm.
And is that typically cargo or people or both?
It could be either. Yep, either.
So we've talked about some of the early career folks, how we build time. That's very much appreciated. I'm curious about something else too. I've noticed that there are, for our flying club, some of our CFIs have been actually transitioning into what I would can say respectfully later in their career into a job as an ATP or into, I think you were just saying, some of the corporate positions. What might that be like for someone who might not know that that's an option for them?
Oh, sure. So once again, you know, ideally you're trying to get to the airlines, right? That is, in my view, I did it all, right? I flew instructed, I flew corporate, and I was with United for 41 years. So that's the place to be. The lifestyle is better. That is the goal for most people. So, but getting the experience, because you want to be able to succeed in the training program. And the way you succeed in the training program is you have experience and you have some knowledge about flying. So whether you do it through the local fixed base operation or a corporate flight department, is even a NetJet, something like that, all works. But if you want to be an airline pilot, you know, you need to get the experience and become competitive and go work for a feeder carrier, right? Mm-hmm. They are great places to learn, because the advantage to a feeder carrier is the flying is just like the airline flying. It's the exact same, other than maybe the international side of it, and it's lots of legs, lots of experience, up and down all day long, in and out of busy airports, and it's very, very transferable to the airlines.
Mm-hmm.
So you said for you, the epitome, the best job is being an airline pilot, and that was the best. Why is that the best for you? What did you enjoy about that compared to some of the other jobs that you had?
So I loved everything about it. First, the schedule. You bid your schedules, right? Second, the mission. Everything gets done for you. I don't want to say I'm a lazy pilot, but I'm an airline pilot, right? So what's so great about that is you have a dispatcher, you have a caterer, you're not doing all of that stuff. You call maintenance, you have a maintenance department, all that stuff is done for you. So you show up, you pre-flight the aircraft, you do a walk around, you do the preps, or have the first officer do the walk around is even better, right?
Depends on if it's raining or not.
You're right, exactly. You do all the flight planning preparation, right? You're looking at the flight plan, you're looking at where you're going. You're en route internationally. That's very fun. You're flying into airports like Hong Kong, Shanghai, Beijing, you know, you name it, Australia, New Zealand.
Seeing the world.
Yes, Europe. You're flying into all those airports. You have nice layovers, and you live your life in 24-hour increments, so you're not gone from home all that long. I get a little sick of these vacations that take 7 days. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to live my life in 3-day increments. I'll just go back the next week and see more of that city.
So I have one more curious question in the time that we still have. Are there any differences that you see for someone like myself at 41, a mid-career professional who is considering or being pushed into a career as a pilot? What might be some differences that those of us in this position might face?
So I have a lot of friends that have done exactly what you're contemplating doing, and they are, it's funny, one of my very good friends, he was at a smaller carrier, still an airline career, and he came to United. And he said, but I'll never be a wide-body captain. I'm 41 years old. I said, well, you're not going to be a wide-body captain where you are either, you know, the airline that you're at either. So, and he was like, oh my gosh, that's true. Hmm. So you have a lot of years ahead of you, and you can have a great career. And we have a lot of people that come in. United even hires people in their 60s. So you got a lot of career ahead of you. You can have a great career and a lot of fun flying some pretty nice airplanes.
Mm. All right. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time here, but we have been talking to Wendy Morris. Quickly, if people want to come and talk to you in person, where can they find you on the field?
Yeah, we're at the Alpa Tent, which is over kind of behind Boeing, between a little bit off of hangars B and D, kind of off that really mm-hmm. Hangar B. If you come between Boeing and Hangar B, you'll find the Alpa Tent. So we're there. And I also want to put a plug in. It's Women in Aviation Day.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
it is.
I started when there were 1% women. We're now at 7% women. I hope in another 40 years we'll be at 49%.
We can hope, and we will get there together. Thank you very much. And
all right.
You've been listening to EAA Radio.